Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. And I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guests today are Deborah Ward, who's Executive Director of the Alaska Health Commission, and Dr. Ward Herbert. Dr. Herbert's not only Chief Medical Officer, but also Director of the State Division of Public Health, and he is as well the Chair of the Commission. Both Ward and Deborah were with Line 1 in April of this year as we talked about the Healthcare Commission getting going. It's charged with fostering the development of a statewide plan for making high-quality healthcare more available, accessible, and affordable, and that is being asked to form a statewide strategy for improving the health of all Alaskans. We're today going to be looking at where the commission is about 6 to 7 months after our first discussion about that on Line 1. Deb and Ward, welcome to both of you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to be here. Well, let's wrap things up in a package again that helps us understand what's going on. What's the background of the commission? I gave a little bit about the reasons for it, but tell us a little bit more.
Well, the legislature established the commission in state law during 2010. We were really just getting started this past year. But the overriding driver for the interest in creating the commission as a public agency to advise the governor and the legislature is concerns about the continuing growth and the cost of health care.
Give us some idea of why that's an important. How much of our state budget and our national budget has been eaten up by health care costs?
Health care, looking at our overall economy, takes 50 to 100% more of our gross domestic product than any other industrialized country, both in terms of a percent of the gross domestic product and in terms of the dollar equivalents that are spent. So that impacts on our whole economy. Governments, federal government through Medicare, through Medicaid, through employee coverage and so on, state governments spend a considerable amount, close to half of the health care costs are now paid for by governments. For state governments, Medicaid is the fastest growing portion of the budget for every state now, so that governors and legislatures are faced with making decisions. Do we fund Medicaid or do we have fund education? Do we fund Medicaid or do we buy roads? U.S. employees over the last 12 years have seen all of their increased compensation go to increased costs for their health coverage.
Is the rate of growth of health care costs showing any signs of moderating? I mean, are we, I think most people would understand that as a large portion, health care costs are growing faster than other segments as well. That's one of the reasons they're taking up more. But is there any evidence it's slowing?
It slowed a little bit. Mm-hmm. Over during the 80s in Alaska, healthcare cost growth, the average cost growth was about 10% a year. And then over the subsequent 20 years, it was about 8% a year. And this past decade, it's been closer to 6 to 7%. So it's slowed a little bit. However, it has continued to increase both in the U.S. and Alaska at a faster rate than the rate of inflation.
So it's inevitably taking a bigger and bigger and bigger piece of the pie, although there may be some evidence it's moderated a little bit. It's still, I think it's fair to say, I keep hearing it said, it's unsustainable that we can't keep doing this. So most states, the national government, everybody's trying to figure out ways to address this. Is there a fairly uniform understanding of what it is, the parts of healthcare that are growing and driving the costs the most? Is there an acceptance on what those are?
It's really been growing across the board. For a certain period of time, there'll be challenges. Right now, specifically in terms of Medicaid costs, long-term care costs, both institutionalized in nursing homes and in the home long-term care, are growing at a very dramatic rate. Overall, For a number of years, pharmacy costs were increasing quite rapidly there. Currently, a subcomponent of that, the so-called specialty pharmaceuticals, the high-end drugs for rheumatoid arthritis or for cancer or for other diseases, are growing rapidly, such that the projection is that within the next 3 or 4 years, that may constitute 40% of overall pharmacy costs. Technology comes along and can do miraculous things sometimes, but the technology is often very expensive. That's another factor that's driven costs.
Yeah, that's kind of been some of the things I've read, is that new technologies, new treatments, no question that some of those are very, very important, some of the immunologic therapies, but they're extremely pricey. And so now we get into almost the some morality and ethical issues, unfortunately. I mean, we can't keep spending, and when we do, we're taking it from somebody else. And people have just, do you think, well, let me put it this way, do you think the general public understands that dilemma?
I think our system, where most medical costs for most people are paid for by so-called third parties, whether it be government, whether it be insurance companies, removes the decision, the immediate decision, from your pocketbook, which is why some folks have proposed greater participation. Employers are driven to it, where they are increasing the participation by employees in the health insurance premiums. Others have suggested issues like a medical savings account, where the individual consumer makes those decisions. Where you have coverage, such as, for example, Boeing has had for a number of years a so-called first dollar coverage, there's not much disincentive. Medicaid does not have copays generally, with very few exceptions. So there's a less of a disincentive to go to the emergency room sometimes for folks that are enrolled in Medicaid if you have a condition that doesn't really demand that level of service.
And it's true both for the patient and for the provider.
That's correct.
If a patient comes to me and is one of those that's in the situation where they don't have health insurance and they don't qualify for Medicaid, I like to know that, because we really sit down and talk about cost, whereas we probably ought to be talking about cost and benefit with everybody, but it's it doesn't work that way. Patients sometimes push the physician. Sometimes the physicians are hesitant not to subdue some things. But it's a whole different paradigm when you're sitting there talking with somebody who's got to pay out of pocket for these very, very high medical costs today. So, who else is, well, let me do this. I forgot to give contact information. I was just thinking while I was sitting here. For those of you who are listening today and have questions about the commission, healthcare costs, both in Alaska, perhaps even nationally, what the commission is doing, how they're trying to achieve their goals, this is the contact information over the next hour. 550-8433, that's the local number in Anchorage, 550-8433. A toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We'll be here till shortly before 3 o'clock today and can try to answer any questions along those lines about the healthcare commission and healthcare costs, especially in Alaska. Deb, who are the constituents? Who's working on the commission, and how are you all trying to address this big mandate that you got?
Well, we primarily have representatives of the healthcare industry. So we have a representative from the insurance industry, the president of Premera, Jeff Davis, hospital administrator, just immediate past president for or chair of the State Hospital and Nursing Home Association Board, Patrick Branko, who is the hospital administrator and Ketchikan General. We have a representative of primary care physicians. And by the way, these seats are all designated in the law that created the commission. So we have a seat for primary care physicians, for example. And Dr. Noah Laufer is the representative assigned to that seat. So those are just some examples. We also have a representative of the business industry and somebody who participates on the State Chamber of Commerce. And Alan Hippler is his name. He actually is a chief financial officer with a construction firm here in Anchorage. And we also have a consumer representative and someone who's been really actively engaged in AARP over the years is in that seat, Keith Campbell. So we have 14 members. I won't go over all of them right now, but that just to give you a few examples of some of the healthcare industry representatives and then business and consumers. The statute designates the Department of Health and Social Services chief medical officer as the chair. Mm-hmm. So that's why Dr. Hurlburt is in that role. And then we do have non-voting members represented from both the state Senate. Senator Donnie Olson is on the commission, and from the House of Representatives, Representative Wes Keller is on. The state's insurance commissioner's in a seat that's designated non-voting for the governor's office. Linda Hall is in that seat.
And I know from looking at the website and the recent draft of what the work that's been done so far that there's been a couple of looks at healthcare costs in Alaska. And so can we talk about those two reports a little bit?
Well, the commission wanted to understand better both overall spending trends, how much money we're spending, who's paying the bills, and how much are we spending for different types of services. So kind of a bigger picture economic view of healthcare spending in the state. But we also wanted to understand healthcare pricing and reimbursement levels and how they might vary between Alaska and some other states and also within Alaska depending on who the payer is. And so we commissioned two studies this year. One was with the Institute of Social and Economic Research at UAA to do the kind of big picture overview analysis for us. And then we also contracted with Milliman Incorporated, which is an international healthcare actuarial firm, to do an analysis of reimbursement levels in Alaska. We looked at both physician services and hospital services. And we had contracted with ICER first. And they found that total spending for healthcare in the state in 2010 reached $7.5 billion, that it had increased 40% just over the prior 5 years from 2005. And they were projecting that at current trends, we could expect to see the total spending to double again by the end of this decade. And they did put together a real interesting metric for us, too. They compared healthcare spending in the state. I mean, we typically see comparison or as a share of the economy, gross domestic product. Dr. Hurlburt mentioned at the beginning of the session that we're at 18% nationally of gross domestic product spending for healthcare. ICER, since the petroleum industry is such an important part and an important driver of our economy in this state, they looked at total healthcare spending in the state as a percentage of the value of oil produced each year in the state. And so looking at that metric, going back to 1980, we were spending 6% of the value of oil produced at the wellhead on healthcare in 1980. By 1990, by 2000 actually, that had increased to 33%. And in 2010, total healthcare spending was 50%. They're projecting by the end of this decade it'll be close to 75%. So just to give you a sense of how it's consuming a greater and greater proportion of spending. But so looking at the pricing and reimbursement question then and what to ask Milliman, one of the other questions that ICER had answered for us is what we're spending our healthcare dollars on. And very similar to the United States average, about half of all money spent on healthcare in the country goes for hospital services and physician services. And in Alaska, it's actually 60% for those two categories. And then it goes down to 9% for medicine and equipment, those sorts of things. So we decided to focus on those two biggest pieces of the pie first.
Yeah, the hospitalization physician services, because they're at least 50% of the total dollar. Is that true in other states as well? Is it?
Well, I assume so, since it's 50% nationally. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why we're a little bit higher here, more closer to 60%, but.
Okay. And the Milliman study, Dr. Hobart?
The Milliman study came in three phases. Basically, they looked at the comparisons of what was the pricing here for Alaska compared with Washington, Oregon, Idaho to get the other Pacific Northwest states, and then North Dakota and Wyoming, picking a couple of small population, very rural states, looking at potential comparisons. And then for the hospital portion, at the suggestion of the State Hospital Association, we added Hawaii as another high cost of living state. Looked at what the pricing was in comparison to those other states, found that the prices are significantly higher here. The third phase, which is still in draft form and we're looking at that, was trying to get at some of the reasons why the pricing was higher here. Pricing was higher here for physician services, for those who have private insurance. The prices were about 70% greater compared to the comparison states. For Medicare and Medicaid, they were also higher than the other states, but not as large a percentage. Overall, the average was about 60% being higher. Looked at wages up here for those in the healthcare industry as a potential driver, and they were higher, but generally in the 2 to 10% range as far as being a reason for the high costs here. There are obviously some unique aspects to Alaska with our travel costs, with a widely dispersed population. The company, Milliman, that's done the analysis does this widely and I think is getting a good product for us and trying to help us understand why we not only live in a country that spends a lot for health care, why we live in a state that spends a lot for America.
I want to come back to that, and then obviously it'd be nice to wrap up the conclusions of the program, but we have a couple of callers. I want to take those, and then I'll try to remember to come back to that. Chris, you're on line one.
Yes.
What can we do for you?
I tuned in kind of partway through and was struck by one of the things that you mentioned when you were referring to users of the healthcare system, in that they were referred to as consumers rather than as patients. And I find myself wondering if that isn't perhaps part of what's wrong with our healthcare system, that we look at these people that use the system as consumers who have a choice in the matter, whereas sometimes they don't necessarily have that choice.
Any comments?
I think that's correct, that oftentimes the user of the services, and as a physician, Chris, I would certainly agree with you that I would refer to the folks for whom I provided care as patients. Consumers is more of an economic term, and healthcare is an industry, it is a business, and in that sense, folks who use the services are provided as consumers. But I think that you make an important point there. But choice is limited because of the health plan that you may have. You may be limited to certain physicians and other providers. In Alaska, you may be limited just because we have small populations. In isolated areas, you may be limited, as we know seniors are, in Anchorage in selecting a physician because only a relatively small number of physicians in Anchorage feel that they can survive in business with the Medicare reimbursement rates, even though those rates are higher than they are outside Alaska. But it very dramatically limits the choice that the seniors have in this city. So I think you make a good point, Chris.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and take another caller. Bill, you're on line one.
Yeah, thanks. I was listening to a show yesterday, and they were talking about the Federal Reserve, and they said if they had it to do over again, they wouldn't design a system like the Federal Reserve. I think it's fair to say that about the healthcare system. Okay, and people always seem to say, okay, it costs more. One of the biggest costs we have is administrative costs, okay? And that would be one of the things that we could, you know, pare down or, you know, possibly even eliminate if we had a system where instead of it being like an automobile accident where everybody's paying after the fact, in other words, you go in other words, if, just for an example, if I had a healthcare savings account at Providence, if I went in there, they already have my money. They get paid immediately. There is no administrative cost after the fact. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, if, you know, Walmart's getting into healthcare, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that if Costco got into healthcare, what would that system look like to try to reduce the administrative cost? And the second thought is, suppose we just said, okay, what can we pay as a federal government? Medicare can say pay 20%. They probably could. Okay, say my employer could pay 20%. My insurance company could pay 20%. I'm getting a 20% discount because I already have an account with my, you know, provider. Okay, and so we can fight over the other 20%. I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Any comments?
The analysis that we have of the health care costs in Alaska showed that about 10% of our health care dollars go for administrative costs. I think you're right. There was no grand design of what we call our healthcare system. It did develop. The administrative costs vary. One of the things that Medicare sometimes brags about is their relatively low level of administrative costs. Often 3 to 4% will be quoted, but as any physician or any hospital will tell you, their program operates so that there is a great deal of cost shifting in terms of administrative burdens placed on physicians and hospitals. We probably will not, as a nation, and I guess I would say I hope perhaps that we don't have a grand design for a healthcare system, but we do have a crisis in terms of costs. My own bias would be that those who are involved in this business, whether it be physicians, hospital administrators, or others, need to take the lead in addressing the unsustainable financial burden, as Dr. Woodard referred to, so that we can get these costs under control and yet maintain the unique importance of the ethical and moral dimensions of this business that we're in. It really is a unique business.
Just one more comment. When I was looking into this, some information about this program, since it's come up about administrative costs as being one of the cost drivers, and we've talked about new technologies and new treatments, pharmacologic costs, those three are often mentioned. Two other areas we haven't mentioned is chronic disease and the growing burden of chronic disease along with an aging population. So just give those listeners out there some of the problems of almost the classic perfect storm occurring. And all of this is happening at a time when our economy is suffering, and so there's even less resources with which to try to address some of these concerns. So what kind of conclusions can we take away from the pricing things? Do you mind just summarizing those important issues again one more time?
Sure. I think one of the things is just to recognize that healthcare spending continues to increase faster than the rate of inflation. It is consuming a greater share of our state's wealth, and that it's becoming increasingly unaffordable. It's just taking a bigger bite out of employees' paychecks and out of employers' bottom line, as well as taking a greater share of government spending, and it's not sustainable. That there's cost shifting that goes on between the different payers, and that's something else we didn't spend any time talking about yet, but mm-hmm. we asked Milliman to try to give us a picture of how much spending varies between the different payers. And to the last caller's point, the administrative costs associated with that, I can't imagine how providers deal with having one payer pay five times more than another payer and having different billing mechanisms set up for that when they're dealing with as many as 8 or 10, if not more, different payers. commercial insurance premiums here. The per employee cost for employers in Alaska is the highest in the country. It was just a recent study this past month that came out showed we're spending close employers spend close to $12,000 a month per employee. And Milliman showed us that the commercial insurance premiums in Alaska are about 30% higher than they are in these other states that we studied. But one of the things that we didn't talk about when we were talking about pricing and looking at price for insurance is that our healthcare service utilization rate really isn't a major driver in differences in spending. So some of those other things that you mentioned are critically important for us to understand and look at, and we probably will be more focused on as a commission some of these prevention aspects around chronic disease, for just as an example, behavioral health challenges, as well as how we can do a better job of being smart about how we're spending the money. Looking at evidence-based medicine was something we did in our early months at the commission. In the estimate that we spend as much as 30% of our spending for healthcare is estimated to be wasted, spent on procedures that aren't effective or not needed. But that if our utilization is roughly the same, not that there's mm-hmm. not lots of room for improvement mm-hmm. there, roughly the same as the rest of the country or even a little bit less, that our prices really are significantly higher. And mm-hmm. is there something we should do about that? And one of the strategies that the commission is focused on is price and quality transparency.
Okay. Let's come back to that. Will be what we'll address as soon as we get back. We need to take a short break. It's hard for me to believe, but we're already almost halfway through the program. I want to remind everybody you're listening to Line 1, your health connection. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back talking with Deb Ward and Dr. Ward Holbert of the Alaska Health Commission. This is Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, your health connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcast of Line 1, your health connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to those of you listening to Line 1, your health connection from KSKA in Anchorage. This is Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is not Deborah Ward, but Deborah Erickson. Deborah Ward is a friend of mine. Sorry for that slip-up. And also Dr. Ward Holbert. Both of these individuals are involved heavily with the Alaska Healthcare Commission, which is charged with looking at improving access, quality, and so forth, of our health care in Alaska. We've been talking so far about the start of the health care commission. We've been looking at some of the information that we have about costs in Alaska as they compare to other states and the rest of the country. If you've got questions or comments, please feel free to call us at 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Deb, you had made a comment just before we went off the air about cost, price transparency, and quality transparency. And I have heard that issue brought up a couple of times. And it's often under the idea that, hey, when I go to the grocery store, I know what the oranges are going to cost. When I go on vacation, I know what my airline's cost is going to be. I know what the hotel's going to cost. Nobody can tell me what it's going to cost when I go to the hospital. Sometimes the doctor's offices will tell us. What's the problem here?
Well, the financing mechanisms are so messed up. And we were talking, one of the things we talked about earlier was the huge variation in reimbursement levels between different payers. Mm-hmm. And I think, I assume that's one of the reasons why, one of several reasons why it's so hard to get a handle on a price for an individual for a particular service. There are lots of other factors that come into play and that I would imagine would cause providers to feel nervous about quoting a particular price. Looking at mechanisms for making that information more available is one of the strategies the Commission thinks is important. It's not something that's, one, very easy to do, and two, it's not a magic bullet that wouldn't solve all of the problems. But there's a growing interest across the country in a particular mechanism for getting information and making it more readily available for providers as well as for consumers. And it's called an all-payers claims database. One of the things that I think reasons that providers might appreciate this particular mechanism is that it doesn't go to the individual providers and ask them to provide the data. It goes to the payers, the insurance companies, and Medicare and Medicaid, and compiles claims data from those payers. And so there are, I think we're up to maybe 13 states in the country now that have are in the process of developing all-payer claims databases, and more states showing interest in it. And a small handful of those states actually have had it implemented for a few years. And some of those use that data for posting websites to make the information more available for patients and for consumers.
Anything else about price, or what about quality transparency? We haven't really talked about that. I know what's going on nationally is beginning to look at access a lot more. Some issues on quality, very little nationally on price control. But what about up here in quality? What do we know?
When you look at quality, you're thinking partly about outcomes. And on a national basis, where we spend 50 to 100% more than other industrialized countries, we are just about at the bottom of the list of those 27 or 37 countries, depending on which ones you're looking at, in terms of average life expectancy, in terms of infant surviving, infant mortality rates. So those outcomes are not good. We're not getting as much for our investment as other countries are, and you can look at reasons for that. In terms of quality outcomes, a number of states have taken certain conditions, such as cardiac surgery for a cardiac artery bypass operation, and looked at results, looked at death rates, looked at outcomes, and have made that public. Alaska has not done that yet. We do gather some information on a voluntary basis that the State Hospital Nursing Home Association is engaged in and helps us do. But generally, there's not much quality information there. Payers, such as Premera, such as Medicaid, will have information on the rates of complications of surgery, of outcomes. There are other measures that are recognized in terms of preventive things, such as so-called HEDIS outcomes, where a payer will be held accountable for the immunization rate for babies, or the mammography rate for women, or the colorectal cancer screening kinds of things. Those kinds of measures are gathered less here than in other locations where I've worked, but that is there. It is something that we're talking about, and hopefully we'll see more of here.
Okay, we'll come back to some other ideas that the Commission has been looking at in ways to, and one way would be to look at how other states are being successful at doing this. I want to do that, but I do have at least one caller I want to take first. Stephen, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hi. I just wanted a quick clarifying question. A moment ago, I thought I heard Deb say the average insurance cost per employer in Alaska was $12,000 a month. And I'm wondering if that's $12,000 a year or $1,200 a month.
No, that it's close to $12,000 a year.
$12,000 a year, not a month. Right. Okay, thank
you. All right, so one obvious approach to looking at healthcare costs anywhere would be to see what everybody else is doing. So we've, as a commission, you've looked at some other states. What particular things have you found that are interesting?
We've looked specifically at three programs, one in North Carolina, one in Michigan, and one in Oregon. And we have had folks with those programs come and talk to the members of the commission. We have their presentations on the website. All three of those programs, in part, relate to the concept of the patient-centered medical home. Now, that's kind of a hot concept, something that's talked about a lot. But in my mind, it's basically what you always hoped your own doctor would be, and that you'd have a longitudinal relationship with a physician or a nurse practitioner, could be, who knows you, who cares for you, who helps you receive care from other specialties when you need that. So that's a part of each of those programs. In North Carolina, which seemed to be the program that has gotten the most favorable attention from the physician members of the commission, they have, at the time they reported to us, about 92% of the primary care physicians in North Carolina signed up for that program. It was headed by a physician who started a medical group in a rural part of North Carolina. He had been the assistant commissioner and headed up their Medicaid program there previously. They're organized on a regional basis with several of their 100 counties in each region. There are some resources that go into each region to provide, for example, a PharmD, a pharmacist who can help them with the use of medications. There's also some additional money on what's called a per member per month basis that goes to the family medicine physician, the pediatrician, the other primary care physician to help them manage and coordinate the overall needs of their patients, which may be by hiring a nurse in the office that will help do that. The largest program in the country is in Michigan, where they have some, I think, 10,000 primary care physicians signed up. Blue Cross took the lead on that. They worked with the university there. And Oregon has a similar program. But we've looked at some of the things that have been working successfully. They all required some upfront money, but they all show that they have saved significant amounts of money by this better coordination and facilitation of care and the use of the concept of a patient-centered medical home.
Is quality and access also been shown to be improvement, or was it just cost that was looked at?
No, it's quality, it's access. One of the concepts of the patient-centered medical home is same-day access when you need that. It's interesting that the Oregon program actually came up here and looked at what's called the NUCA model at the South Central Foundation Clinic here in Anchorage. They have implemented a number of the concepts there, but it's very much access, it's coordination of care, it's behavioral health services right in there, and it does look at outcomes. How, if you have diabetes, how is your care managed? For diabetic patients, you measure what's called your hemoglobin A1C, and we believe that if that's kept at a low enough level, your chances 20 years from now of still having your kidneys working or still not having an amputation or loss of vision, the other complications of diabetes, is better. So it looks at how are you doing with each individual and on the average with your patients in helping them receive the medical care that they need.
Another issue I know that it's being looked at as a way to control costs is payment reform. And what do we know about how payment occurs in the United States and what kinds of ideas have been proposed to change that into a more, not only to drive better quality, but also better access as well as save money?
Well, I think we had one of the callers bring up earlier, too, is the way the healthcare services are financed. It doesn't drive consumers or purchasers or providers to think as much about quality and payment and value. And so our fee-for-service system, which is what we primarily have in Alaska, it reimburses providers for individual services and really doesn't take into account quality or effectiveness or efficiency in the delivery of services. So the commission started studying different models of payment reform. Is there a different way to pay for healthcare services in a way that would drive quality and improve value? One of the things that we looked at was whether we could start bundling payments around episodes of care or around diagnoses. And we just had some very early learning more about the systems that need to be in place, the types of relationships that would need to exist, where in Alaska, again, we don't have many models where the services are integrated. And so if we were to start looking at paying for services in a different way with payment bundling, there would need to be relationships between, some sort of relationship, not necessarily the actual integration of organizations, but some sort of business relationship between physicians and hospitals, for example.
Let me try to define a little or clarify what you're saying so that people listening may get a better concept. As I understand what you're talking about when you say bundling, is that if a person goes to the hospital and has some surgery done, let's say for an acute appendix, that physician who made the initial diagnosis may have been me in my office, and he was then sent maybe to the emergency room where there's emergency room people, and then there's a surgeon involved, and there's hospital costs, then there's technicians costs, and then there's maybe some rehabilitation costs and everything. That bundling, instead of each of those individuals getting paid for piecemeal work that they did, there might be a single number that covers that diagnostic code, acute appendicitis, of which all the people involved in will get some representative proportion.
That's correct.
Does that explain what that? I think it's important that people understand that aspect of things. Mm-hmm. What kind of problems does that cause? I mean, anytime you start talking about changing people's way of getting paid, you're going to get a lot of backwash, so to speak. What are some reasonable concerns that people have?
Well, the criticism of the current system is that we pay for care in a way that encourages more care.
Absolutely.
More procedures, more visits, more whatever.
Right.
So if you're reimbursing somebody in either on so many dollars per month or so much for an episode of care or on a fee to cover all care costs, then there's concern, does that foster an environment where there is stinting on care, mm-hmm. where people don't receive the care they need because it costs money and because it reduces the amount of profit in the business. The so-called accountable care organization that CMS is talking about now is a part of the interest in changing the way we pay for care. But it does include a wide range of options, which could be from so many dollars to your primary care provider for all your primary care, but nothing else, or so much money to an organization that includes primary care specialists, other kinds of physician specialists, hospitals, and so on, to provide all your care. There are organizations such as Kaiser, which that's exactly what it is. When you pay your premium to that organization or group health in Seattle, that covers all your care. They're totally responsible for all your care. And the outcomes from a Kaiser, from a Geisinger clinic, from a Marsh clinic, from a Mayo clinic, the outcomes have tended to be very good. So while there are reasonable concerns that you could foster a situation where there's stinting on care, As far as an outcomes basis, some of the best care in the country is from those kinds of organizations.
One of the earlier callers said if we were to design our healthcare system again from the ground up, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. And I think if there is a reasonable argument, is what you'd said, is the current healthcare system is not designed to really be preventative, to save money, address towards quality. It's to do as many procedures as you can. And it's not to say that physicians aren't ethical or anything else. It's just when you get incented to do certain things, your thought process, your efforts are incented to go in a certain direction. In a accountable care organization where you have the Mayo Clinic gets X amount of dollars. All the physicians in that clinic know they only have X amount of dollars with which to take care. They're going to cooperate with each other better. They're going to talk to each other about the best and safest ways. They're going to try to encourage that patient to be compliant and adherent with their medications. The pharmacies are going to look at better ways to use more cost-effective medications and follow up and make sure patients are taking them. And so that all in all, ideally, that decreases the care, the cost of healthcare, and probably could be done with equal quality, if not better. Is that what we're talking about? That's the idea.
I think that's exactly right.
But it's a change.
Right. Well,
and the patients, the physicians, everybody, healthcare, everybody's hesitant.
It's particularly a significant change for Alaska because we don't have a delivery system that's structured the way it is in some other states.
Right.
We don't have a Mayo here.
Right. The Native Medical Center has more of a, I call it a closed panel. It's not, I mean, you got a group of people and a group of money that they use. In the private sector, that's not true.
The tribal health system is going to be the closest.
Similar.
Tribal,
military.
Military, right. VA is going to be closer to that. But in the private sector in Alaska, we have mostly small and solo group practices with little integration in the with hospital services. And so one of the things the commission did, and one of the approaches of payment reform could be to help support the delivery system to move in a direction that fosters better coordination. But understanding that we're not going to be able to make that change overnight, the commission is a first step in looking and studying payment reform. In our draft recommendations for this year, it's just laid out some attributes of what a payment reform initiative needed to be mindful of, the importance of creating an environment where you could foster trust relationships between the providers, taking a multi-payer approach. So rather than providers having to deal with a private insurance company down the road from the state Medicaid program, and other payers coming up with their own experiments on how we're going to pay for services differently, and the poor provider trying to figure out how to respond to a bunch of different payers taking different approaches to testing this, that payers need to work together if they're interested in working on a payment reform initiative, just as another example of one of our recommendations.
And work
with providers on that, too.
Well, one of the precepts of the ACO, or Accountable Care Organization, that's talked about is a recognition that if that's to succeed, the physicians need to be in leadership roles in that kind of a payment system. The physician, the nurse practitioner, they're the folks that are there when the patient hurts, when the rubber meets the road, and they bring that dimension to the decision. There's a recognition that it can't just be the quote suits or just the business people. That kind of knowledge and expertise is needed, but the physicians need to be in leadership roles.
Judy, you're on line one.
Hi. I'm calling in reference to a program that has been shown to really reduce the amount of hospitalizations that people experience, and this is called Managing Chronic Conditions. It's a chronic condition self-management class. So what it focuses on is allowing people to, we tell them, not instead of letting your chronic condition take over you, you will take over it. Learn to manage it. It's a 6-week course, and we provide everything. We started out with parish nurses. You don't know who we are, and we just, help advocate for health in the community. But it's just a wonderful program, and I really like to mention it because it has, like I said, it has been shown to reduce the need for hospitalizations in many people. There's one that's specific for chronic conditions, and they're, like I said, they're six-week courses. They're usually about two and a half hours each day, once a week for 6 weeks. And it's free because we have a grant. And there's one that specifically focuses on diabetes.
Okay. All right, good. Thanks for your comments.
Do you want some phone numbers?
Sure.
Yeah, if people are interested in these classes, they can call in Anchorage 269-2020, or they can call any of the senior service centers, like the Palmer, like the Anchorage Senior Center, because they have classes there, and then the ones in Palmer and Wasilla.
All right. Judy, thanks very much for your call.
Okay, bye.
Just a comment on that. I think just I wanted to acknowledge we do actually know the Parish Nurse Program. It's a wonderful community health resource. And one of the things that the Commission's focused on and that we're finding, Dr. Hurlburt's mentioned a couple of times that as we're studying these different successful models, that one of the attributes that comes out time and time again is to the extent the clinician has, clinicians are playing a leadership role in designing these programs. That's significant, but increasing the patient's and the consumer's role in supporting their own health and taking responsibility and managing their own health and making sure that they have the tools and the information that they need to do that is another important aspect of getting a handle on costs. So I appreciate the caller's reference to the program and providing that information.
Beverly, you're on line one. Can we answer a question for you?
Yes, perhaps. First of all, I do need to say that I believe the healthcare system is incredibly broken, or I don't think it was ever fixed. And addressing it is such a so incredibly important now. It's unwieldy, it's unconscionable, and terribly expensive. My question is, for instance, I just had a bill for a routine blood draw, and it cost $650. My insurance paid for $400. I don't have a problem with that. But I would really like to know, of that $650, exactly what money goes to whom. And I think that's my question and concern is I'd really like to follow the money trail and if there's any way to do that.
Comments?
Well, going back to Deb's comment earlier, one of the plans and one of the things that the commission thinks is important is to have greater transparency in what prices are, what costs are, what that money does. That's why we have invested money with this international actuarial firm, Milliman. We will be expanding that contract, looking at some other areas like pharmacy, like skilled nursing home care. But I think that you make the point that it has been something that's happened in a dark cave at times. And none of us, even as a physician who spent many decades providing care. I've also worked for health plans, worked on the government side. There's much that's a mystery. And we believe if we can have more transparency there, then that can address the issue and the concern that you bring up, because it is real. One of the things that we have shown is that $600 cost, we have pretty good documentation when you specifically talk about Alaska, that pretty much across the board, we are paying more than we pay elsewhere in the country, and we know that elsewhere in the country, we pay more than is paid in other countries.
Yeah, of that $600, I mean, can you guess who gets what?
It really depends on what the tests were done, mm-hmm. Beverly. It'd be very difficult from here. I mean, some tests cost hundreds of dollars just to do. If it was just common CBC, then so there, it's very difficult without more information.
Oh sure, I know. It was just kind of a silly question, but it does get me thinking about who gets the money.
Right.
And that's all. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks for your call. No, this has taken a lot more time getting into this than I ever imagined. We have about 3 minutes left or so. We have a couple phone calls, a couple emails, and I think the best thing for me to do at this time is to let the two of you make some comments about what's important, what you're doing, how you see this coming down, and any last minute kind of comments. Deborah, you want to try to start?
I'll take a stab at it. First, the main thing I want to make sure the callers know, the commission has a draft set of findings and recommendations for this year posted for public comment. So anybody who's interested in looking at those statements and offering some comments to the commission for this year, eventually this document will be a set of recommendations to the governor and the legislature that they'll receive in January. But we would welcome the public's comments. One other thing that we haven't had a chance to talk about this afternoon that the commission's very interested and focused on is prevention, how we create conditions where folks can live healthier lifestyles.
You can get to a link to the information for public comment by going to our website, line1 at alaskapublic.org, by the way. Dr. Hobart.
Yes, I would echo that we've talked a lot about price, we've talked about cost, we've talked about medical care. But whereas not too long ago we died mostly from accidents, from injuries, from infectious diseases, now we are getting sick and dying from diseases of choice. It relates to the call about the parish nurse program that we had. With our overweight and obesity, it's predicted that young children being born now may be the first generation of Americans to live shorter than their parents. Choices to be overweight, choices to smoke, choices to do risky things in terms of accidents and injuries are what are killing us now. Those are choices that we need to make better choices on as a country, and that needs to be a part of the focus, and I think is an important area to close on.
Yeah. It may be fair to say, and I haven't thought about this first time it's come up, that the healthcare system has addressed and made us healthier. During this time, the healthcare system has been part of the fact that Americans and perhaps people in all across the world are healthier and wealthier than they've ever been. But now things like accidents and drug abuse and things that are outside of the absolute control of the healthcare system are beginning to play a bigger and bigger role, including chronic diseases, which gets back to how we decide to live our lives. So there's a lot going on that makes this whole healthcare dollar expense hard to get a grip on and understand, but we need to do it. Well, listen, I appreciate the effort to let people know that there is work going on. It sounds like it's excellent work. It's a difficult, difficult problem. I hope we can continue to share how you guys are grappling with this again in the future.
Thank you, Thad.
Next week, no, actually 2 weeks. Next week is Thanksgiving holiday. We will not be here. In 2 weeks, we're going to be back, and we'll be addressing where we are with AIDS, particularly in Alaska, with Trevor Storrs, who's executive director of the Alaskan AIDS Assistant Association, and a physician assistant named Terry Brammel, who is an HIV clinical specialist with Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Pat Yak is vice president of public media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for listening, especially to those who took the time to call and email today. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.